Life can always use more Cedar Point. And right now, you can get more Cedar Point for less with the Fun Day Bundle for just $74.99. Each bundle gets you admission, parking, and all-day dining for one low price. That means more coasters like Steel Vengeance and more nostalgic fun in the boardwalk area. But you better hurry because this bundle won't last. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Welcome to Your Mom is a Podcast. In this
your
very
mom.
Special podcast, your mom, you know what, your mom's a podcast.
Yeah, your mom's a podcast.
Here we interview incredible people and their moms to be like, excuse me, how did you do it?
I'm Sundy Parikh. You're
Milana Weintraub.
And we're both two LA-based comedians and actors, and we're also new parents, and we need help.
So we're going to talk to people who are incredible and inspiring and change the world, crack us up, all of the above.
And learn to be better parents, and also learn to have some compassion for our parents.
Yeah, who maybe did some things a little wonky or a little perfect, because look at us, we turned out to be perfect people.
So welcome to Your Mom is a Podcast.
Sam, hi.
Hi, friends.
Oh my gosh. This is so exciting.
You're quite a pivotal character in Sandeep and I's friendship, in like our whole life together for maybe the past 10 years. In fact, I would say even personally, you've had, and this is even by accident, a huge effect on my career. Because the way that I met you is not even through like anybody I still know. It was like a roommate's friend was a casting director and was like, college humor is holding auditions.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And I met up with Spencer and Kearns and did like three characters in a closet. Literally, they were like, here's the smallest room we have. And
we do that to psych you out. Yeah.
Yeah. And
it's right next to a huge cavernous room that they could
put me in, but that would have been
empty.
Even
you can
more
see it.
Scary.
Like a, there's glass. You can see through to it, but
I think that's
you're
right.
Not allowed.
Well, I think the first time I met you was in the LA College Humor offices.
Maybe in the office. And then separately, I met your wife, Elaine, who I'm also a huge fan of, walking to a party. And then our friendship was solidified because I invited you two to come do mushrooms with me and Sandeep and a few other friends.
Yeah, that was a very transformative experience for me in terms of my LA and my internal journey, my external and my internal journey. But that makes me feel great when you say that this friendship like outlasted the people who introduced me to you. It makes me feel like I won a reality show.
You're the last remaining survivor of this friendship.
Last friend standing. I love you both so much. It's this podcast will not be able to capture the amount of profound affection that I have for both of you.
Go ahead and try.
Yeah, totally.
Do you remember when you and Sandeep met for the first time?
I think it was just a general meeting that.
Yeah, I think it was. I think
that
it was
set for us.
I think
like
it was a general meeting. And then like the next time we met, we were camping together.
That
we were mushrooms together.
Did the two most opposite ways you can meet a human being.
But
in
both
succession.
Very LA, ironically.
Yes, that's true. That's true. For those who don't know Sam Reich, he is a writer, he's a producer, a comedian, an actor, and a media executive. He is currently the CEO of Dropout, formerly College Humor, and has collaborated from everyone from Michelle Obama to Weird Al Yankovic. That is everyone. That span, every single person's in between that span.
That's the We Are the World song.
He is a creator and host of Game Changer. He's executive producer of Dimension 20, Breaking News, and Actually. And his mom, who I got the privilege of interviewing and I had the chance to meet, is Claire Dalton. And this is what she told us about herself.
My name is Claire Dalton. I'm now 73 years old. I was born in England and raised there, came to the United States partly for professional reasons when I got out of college to pursue graduate work here, and partly because I had already fallen in love with Sam's dad. So we raised both of our sons, Sam's the younger of two, in Cambridge, Massachusetts. I was a professor of law for the first chunk of my career. I left that in my mid-50s and retrained as an acupuncturist. And I was an acupuncturist for another 10 years or so, then essentially retired.
How cool and brave.
How cool, right?
Many different lives to be raised in a different country, to move here, to be married to your dad, which is probably a whole other trip, to teach law, and then to be like,
never mind.
I'm going to go to acupuncture school and study Chinese medicine. I'm imagining you had to study.
Yeah, five element acupuncture. She studied in Gainesville, Florida. Was like absolutely the oldest in her class. Yeah, the home of Eastern medicine. Yeah, my mom is an extraordinary woman. And I think it makes sense in a patriarchal society and my dad being well known that people are always saying to me, boy, it must be tough to live up to your dad. And I think to a degree that's true, but the truth is my mom is in a lot of ways even harder to live up to. She's an extraordinary human being. How does anyone do this without their heart absolutely bursting?
Oh, it's the best. Show? It's
that's, the best. That's the whole point
so
of the show.
I'm so happy your heart is bursting. Honestly, we love doing this show because we love talking about parenting. But it also does feel like we get to give a gift to our friends to have this experience with their moms.
That's the best content, I think. The best content is like one little part surprise party.
That's what you do. You do that a lot on your show. So our first question is, the world is ending. There's going to be one spaceship that's going to carry a small group of people to a distant planet to rebuild the human race. In 1 minute, make a pitch as to why Sam has to be on that ship.
Ooh, I thought for sure I was going to pitch why the two of you have to be on that ship with me. That would be easier. What do I bring to the new society? I'm kind of the wild card. That could not be further from the truth. Look, sharks, there are some very creative people out there. And there are some very pragmatic people out there, your left brain thinkers and your right brain thinkers. I think I bring a rare combination of both of those things to the table. I think I am often the most pragmatic person in a room full of creative people and the most creative person in a room full of pragmatic people.
Mm.
And in that sense, I think I can help figure out water. I think I can do that for us.
And in that sense, molecular biology.
It's like versatility, basically. Right.
But my condition is bringing my friends Milana and Sandeep with me.
Okay, that's a great answer.
Yeah, let's hear what Claire had to say.
Sam should be on that spaceship, first of all, because he will make people laugh and he'll help them, help distract them from the anxiety that such a trip will have. Attached to it. Also because he is a sensitive and a gentle soul. And we've made enough mistakes with pushing people in the direction on this planet of sort of aggression and defensiveness. And hopefully if we were starting over on another planet, we'd want people who had a different vision for humanity.
Oh, that's a great response.
I love how she starts with like, he'd be a great, you know, he'd be a great jester.
And
goes into this like beautiful explanation of how actually this is exactly the type of character of person that we would need to like repopulate the human race. So
you can imagine growing up, there was a lot of talk about leadership in my household. And I remember my parents saying that from a young age, that one of the ironies about leadership is it's often the people who wouldn't want to become leaders that mm-hmm. you would want as leaders.
It's almost a little bit of the Dunning-Kruger effect. You guys have heard of this test?
Yes.
The smarter you feel, mm-hmm. the dumber you are.
That's great news for me, since I feel like the idiot.
I know, same, all the time. I've thought that about projects where I'm like, ugh, this is terrible. We didn't get any of the shots we need. Yeah. And then my friends who are more experienced are like, good. if you feel inadequate, that's probably means you're succeeding. So it's a little bit of that, of like, if you think you're going to be a great leader, you probably have no place in the field. So then how did you get to becoming such a leader? Because you dropped out of high school.
True.
You didn't go to college.
True.
And yet you've been in a very community driven way leading since you were a kid.
Oh, yeah. That was not like a very natural path for me, in the sense that I grew up feeling sort of like the odd man out in my family. I come from a family of overachievers. My mom, my dad, and my brother. My brother was president of his class. He was captain of the cross country team. And meanwhile, I was mostly a tender little creative kid who wanted to be drawing or sitting in front of the computer, wanted sort of creative command over a very small world. And it was only once I like really entered the workforce, which I did a little early, dropping out of school when I did, which I realized I was going to have to take on leadership roles in order to do what I wanted to do for a living. Mm-hmm. And then I think once I started to, as we kind of all do, I realized that those influences were somewhere in me and I could channel them. I mean, I think we, whether it's nurture or nature, we channel our parents sometimes.
Were you thinking about your parents as you were starting your ventures, you know, in like you started a sketch team really early on, and then again, like took a leadership role in College Humor and now have Dropout. How much do you consider your parents?
Yeah.
When doing this, you know, cause you're right. So your dad is Robert Reich, who, was the Secretary of
Labor
for Clinton. and still a very prominent figure, very active on social media, very vocal in so many admirable ways. How present are they in your ambition?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's one way in which I had this experience of dropping out of school when I was 16 due to mental health issues. Mm-hmm. And that's like a vague way of saying something I'm very happy to say in specificity, which is I was horribly clinically depressed, like to the point mm-hmm. of really no longer being able to function successfully in the high octane prep school that I was a part of. Buckingham Brown and Nichols School. Mm-hmm. Law firm or high school? Great question.
It sounds a little bit like a cult for white people only. And do you think it was the pressure from both the school and your parents that got you to place?
Yeah, I think it was feeling like a little bit of a black sheep in this world that was pretty markedly non-creative and hyper-academic. So the experience of dropping out of school was really interesting because I got to see my parents still love me. Mm-hmm. Like I dashed my family's expectations of me. Like coming from the family I come from, it's like, you know, go to an Ivy League university, probably get a job as a professor or a doctor or a lawyer. And I really threw that to the wind and they stayed with me through that journey. So like, as I was beginning my creative career, I was certainly afraid of disappointing them. I was also afraid of simply failing and not surviving and not having a backup plan, as they clearly wanted me to have. So I think certainly they were kind of in the background of my mind in that respect. But I feel very lucky to have failed as spectacularly as I did and nonetheless have their support.
So, I mean, we did ask your mom, actually, you know, tell us about a really challenging moment you had in raising Sam. Generally, we usually try to make you guess as to what she said, but let's just say it's thematically relevant to what you're talking about. So why don't we play that answer?
When Sam was in ninth grade, it became clear that he was not thriving in school. And in fact, that he was getting depressed. And so over the course of the next year, we really struggled with how to support him. So he dropped out of his high school in the middle of sophomore year, and we found a program where he could spend 3 months in England in kind of a special tutorial college kind of a setting. It was terrifying knowing that he was going through a hard time emotionally to have him actually across the Atlantic. But then when he came back, he tried again with a couple of different high schools, and then it just clearly wasn't working. And so I remember very clearly the conversation in which, you know, I said to him, "Sam, I think it's not about finding the right high school. I think perhaps high school isn't right for you." And I think he hadn't even sort of dared think that that was a solution, because the family ethic, again, was so much about education as what gives you security and a path forward in life. So that was wrenchingly difficult for us as his parents. But it was just clear by then that that's what was needed, that he needed to get out of that environment and do what he wanted to do with his life.
See, that's wild to me. You know, that, and I wonder if this is how you remember it, when she says that she, you know, she sort of had the thought of, hey, maybe high school is not for you at all. I'm curious. I want to like kind of double click in that moment for you, like hearing that from your parents. I just can't I don't know if it's just me and my Indian parents, but there's no way in hell my parents are telling me that high school is not right for me.
They're for sure. I mean, my mom is using the royal we here in a way that is super generous, but it was her and like not my dad who saved my life in that chapter of my life. You had another question for another one of your guests on your delightful and well-formatted podcast that I am so honored to take part in. This is an ad within your podcast for your podcast, which was, what is the greatest gift that your parent ever gave you? Well, I'm sure there's a very trivial answer that I could come up with to that answer that's like an actual gift. The thing that my mom did for me that was so spectacular is like get creative with me in terms of solving that problem. It was my mom getting creative and then, you know, pitching hard my dad this idea.
Yeah. That's wild. That's just wild to me. I think about it like we have kids of our own, and part of that's the part of the goal of this is that, hey, we know a lot of amazing people. We want to know how they got that way. I'm just like transporting myself into that situation for my son, where he like would want to do something totally, you know, or he's struggling in some way. And like, man, I guess that the easiest way to, or not easiest, but the thing to really do is you got to meet them where they're at.
Yeah. But your kid wants to drop out of school and become an actor?
Yeah. Oh, like,
are you kidding? At the age of 16?
You know what I think is actually the lesson here for me as a parent is to maybe we don't always know what's best. There's this idea, there's so many things that are comforting to us that provide this sense of security, air quotes. And perhaps the thing we can do is give our kids the skill of, as you said, Sam, thinking creatively with them and training them in creative problem solving. Because that's the thing they're going to have to do again and again and again and many, many times in their lives. So we could always tell them what to do. I mean, it starts like small with my kid. I'm trying to not like do the puzzle for him. I'm trying to not be like, oh, well, this piece fits in here. See how that works? Right. And just let him like creatively problem solve. And this is a big boy version of that. This is a 16-year-old who's struggling. And the thing that I want to do as your mom is say, well, this is where you fit.
Yeah, I mean, that had to be what my parents were thinking, right? Not that I would become a professional actor, but that I would figure out the puzzle, period. Mm-hmm. My brother talks a lot about raising his nieces. He says he assumed that the art of parenting would be way more rearing a child, and instead he feels like he is bearing witness to a child. You know, he's there sort of for the ride.
Just making sure his seatbelt's buckled every once in a while, just checking in, making sure his hands are inside the vehicle at all times.
It's also like, I remember like taking the walk with my mom with our dogs around the block where I said, you know, I'd really like to get more serious about acting. And so what she did is enroll me in a summer program where I really would discover a lot of this stuff for the first time. But like, would I have even brought that up a second time if she wasn't listening? You know, a third, like it really required her being tuned into me.
And to really listen to your pain. I think, you know, I think we especially want to problem solve when we hear that our kids are in pain. We especially want to control more when we hear our kid is depressed. We're like, well, here is the solution for that. But for her to be collaborative it's really my biggest takeaway from this.
I think this leads into a question that we asked pretty beautifully. We asked her mom when he was a kid, what was the bravest, most adventurous thing he did? Do you know what she might have said?
I mean, probably going to England as a clinically depressed 15-year-old. Oh, but maybe also putting on a play. Well, I don't know.
Let's hear what she has to say.
In some ways, Sam was not brave in the traditional ways that we think of bravery, right? He was not really a risk taker physically, but he was extraordinarily brave in being honest and authentic about his own emotions. Sam would be upset about something, and you would try to comfort him. And Sam would say, I need to cry more about this. Or he was, again, upset about something, and you would ask him what was going on, and he would tell you on a scale of 1 to 10, he would say, I 5 angry about that. And again, this is, you know, a toddler or someone who's just coming to language, but he had those feelings and he was going to tell you about them. And that was in a context where I think neither his father nor I were particularly good at owning our own emotions. And here was this little guy saying, don't prematurely try to shut me down. I'm going to tell you how I feel.
Yeah, so she went back to toddlerhood to 3-year-old Sam.
I mean, I would have never guessed.
I ten happy about that answer. That's all I gotta say.
I would have never guessed that. But I do, you know, I do remember having that language for emotions when I was little, like wanting to give people like a sense of my range of emotion in order so that like if I was an 11, they would know about it, you know?
Oh, that's so great. That's actually crazy. Quite emotionally intelligent. First of all, to say, I need to cry about this some more. That's body keeps a score 101.
Oh, you know? Hell yeah.
Like there is so much, especially also that your parents like saw that, encouraged that. You kept it up. You're still a big old crybaby.
I'm still a crybaby. It's true.
Well, I would say that it's like, it's really just emotional intelligence. It's you saying, I have this feeling that I'm not ready to stop because I need to get the feeling out of my body. And so much of what we do, especially to boys, is say, actually hold that thing in and let it rot.
Oh my God.
Until it turns into anger and you can take it out onto somebody else. So, you being able to say I have more tears, I gotta cry.
Yeah.
That's a thing I do say to my son when he is sad about anything. I'll say, do you wanna go do something about it? Or do we wanna go play?
Elaine and I say that to each other too.
Yeah.
We you know, I think a early sort of mistake that's easy to make in relationships or just relating to your partner emotionally is wanting to fix everything. You know, language that Elaine and I use with each other is often like, do you need to be upset about this right now? And I just, I feel very lucky, speaking of crying. So like, I think most people know that my dad is short. They don't necessarily know how short. He is 4'10". He is a very, very small man. It's kind of dwarfism called Fairbanks disease. And he was a big crier, like a very sentimental, very small man who probably is like, if the dictionary had opposites, had antonyms. Well, it does. They're called antonyms. He's like the opposite of macho. And my mom is a very strong human being. Some of that I think comes from being British, but she is.
Yeah, I got a lot of macho vibes from your mom for sure.
Yeah, definitely, very, definitely. Like aggro, right?
Yeah. I was like, whoa, did you just like snort some creatine before this? Holy cow. Claire, take it down.
Take it down a notch. She's very gentle, but she's assertive and confident and competent. And so I didn't really grow up with very traditional definitions of, or like stereotypical definitions of masculinity and femininity, which is something I feel very grateful for.
I wonder if that is what makes you
such a
Well, no, I was going to say such a great balance of the two. I wonder if that's why.
Clip it. Send it to socials.
I always win when we arm wrestle. You know, because again, everything is about like coming back to like, how did you get this way? You're so wonderful. We love you so much. If our kid turned out like you, we would feel so lucky. And is this part of like why you're so good at balancing this being in charge, but also being very emotionally intelligent, that you are very practical, but also very aware that there's like a, you know, kind of like you said, you're the most this person in one room and the most the other person in this room. So it's like there's something kind of well balanced about you. And I wonder if that's because it was like shaken up in your house.
Yeah. I mean, that's really interesting. I think that a lot of the EQ comes from mom. I think it comes from dad too. My dad had a lot of EQ in like a very public way. Like he's very charismatic. He's very good at a dinner party. My mom, I think, did more of the emotional heavy lifting with my brother and I. The difficult, more intimate conversations, especially growing up. And I think the way that she manages to hold people in great respect while also acknowledging their feelings is something that I learned from her and have put into effect in my life.
On that note, we did ask your mom, what is the best trait that she passed down to you, Sam? So would you say it's this what you're talking about now?
Yeah, absolutely. Empathy and respect for my fellow human beings. Yeah.
Gross. All right, let's play the tape.
Maybe the best trait is bringing the most of yourself that you can to the work that you've chosen. Authenticity, dedication, discipline. You know, both of his parents were academics and his route was a very different route. But I think what he did absorb from that family ethic was you do what you love and you bring, as I said, sort of all of yourself to it.
Whoa. That's actually a better answer than mine.
Yeah.
It's very funny. My
you're doing terribly at the Cold Gold Stars. I think you're a
by the way, I somehow knew that I would do terribly at this. I'm not surprised.
You're winning at life, losing at this podcast game.
Yeah, damn it.
I think you're fine.
This is rough for you.
My brother and I had this conversation once where I said, you know, I'm such the black sheep of the family, given what I've decided to do in terms of going into comedy versus all of the rest of you who have gone into either academics or public service or politics or some combination thereof. And like, I'm such the rebel. And my brother's response was, Sam, what are you talking about? You conformed completely. You're successful. Which is so funny that, like, in my paradigm, like, I always thought of what I was doing as avant-garde and distinct from the rest of my family. But the truth is, like, all their overachievedness has totally landed in me, just in my career
own
instead
realm.
Of theirs.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I am absolutely my parents' child, for better or for worse.
Right. You just brought it to your own, like, planet, essentially.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so far, just so that we're up on the map, I think you have zero stars.
Zero. Let me just really quick check, because there's a lot here to add. Yeah. I'm going to do the math here. Carry the one. Zero. Zero. The
zero. Cool, cool,
zero.
Cool.
Zero stars.
Cool. There was some arithmetic you needed to do in order to get there.
No,
you needed to add up three zeros.
Life can always use more Cedar Point. And right now, you can get more Cedar Point for less with the Fun Day Bundle for just $74.99. Each bundle gets you admission, parking, and all-day dining for one low price. That means more coasters like Steel Vengeance and more nostalgic fun in the boardwalk area. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Let's go with the worst trait that your mom passed down to you.
Ooh. All right. Just a guess. But I'm going to go with, like, the shadow side of this hard work, meaning, like, a little bit of workaholism, or, like, work at the expense of other things in life. Now, this is a bit of a gamble, considering that mom went for work as the plus two.
Well, let's see. Let's see.
It's the tendency to workaholism, giving career priority over other aspects of your life.
Oh my gosh. Congratulations on your board. Addiction to work. Oh, I'm so proud.
And kind of word for word.
Yeah.
Workaholism and putting work above other things in your life.
Yeah. Actually, this is even more word for word. We cut this part out, but she even says it's the flip side of what I've already said. And you said it was the shadow side.
Whoa.
So you guys are very in tune.
It's very like my mom and I to be in tune about our self-criticism and, like, not our positives.
Yes, you could disagree on all the good. That's so funny. So where does this workaholism come from?
Mom and my dad were probably attracted to each other because work in some ways brought them together. Like, so did creativity. They actually met auditioning for the same play when they were at Oxford together. But I think that they built a life around their careers. Like, it was very important to both of them. They both get it from their parents. In my mom's case, her dad was super academic and was a teacher himself, regretted, I think, never becoming a professor, and put a lot of pressure on my mom to become one. She wanted to be an actor. And truthfully, her father basically said no. And then she said, well, what about a psychologist or a psychiatrist? He said no. And so she became a law professor, which is what he wanted for her.
Oh, man.
So that actually brings us beautifully to our next question. When you told your mom that you wanted acting to be more of a hobby.
More than just a hobby.
More than just a hobby. Yeah. What was that moment like?
I mean... This was sort of like a disease that became worse over time, in the sense of when I first started making inklings about this, it was like before sending me off to these summer programs. And then I started taking it really seriously. And then it was like, I wanted to make a career out of this. I remember that my parents really coaching me on this idea of a fallback plan, or a plan B.
Same.
you know, it's great that you want to be an actor, but let's make sure that you can make money some other way if that doesn't work out. And I remember attending some kind of talk that a child acting coach was giving, which my mom took me to, because my mom, if nothing else, is an incredibly diligent student. So it's like, if I made any inkling about anything, there'd be a sort of itinerary that we would follow together. And this coach said, you know, when you tell your child, when you talk to your child about a plan B, you're essentially saying, I don't believe in you. And on the car ride home, she said, do you feel that way? And I said, yeah. So remember, this is a completely beside the point, having the conversation with my dad, where his response was, you're so good at so many things. Why does it have to be acting? And I said, I'm also really into poetry. And his response was, acting sounds good. Let's stick with
Stick with that. Quickly looking up the average household income for a poet. And yeah, no, please stick to acting. All right, well,
okay, let's hear what your mom said.
At one point when maybe he was just making the transition out of high school, I went with him to an evening at which some actor or director was speaking to parents of kids who were interested in theater. And this presenter said, when you tell your kid that you just want them to have a plan B, you are telling them that you don't think they're going to make it. And that just went through me. So when we were driving home, I said to Sam, is that how you hear me when I say, you know, why don't you at least get your GED in case you ever want to go to college? And he said, that's how I hear you. It actually brought me to tears. It does even now. And I said, forget it. I absolutely have faith in you. You know, forgive me. It's just my security consciousness speaking, but you need to go for it. And then I think as soon as he was free of the demands of school and was making his way, yeah, it wasn't clear how exactly that was going to work. And what we did do, which I think was really important, was to say, this is your chosen path. So we don't want you to be waiting tables or scrambling to try to support yourself. We'll support you through the time that you would have graduated from college at the same level that we would have supported you going to college. So you have that amount of time where you can really focus on making this work. You know, that was both an expression of confidence, but it also was just meaning that he wasn't held back in pursuing the vision.
I'll tell you something. This maybe came a little bit more from my dad than my mom, but I thought it was so clever. Mind you, I say this, you know, huge, just from a place of total and absolute privilege. They gave me $3,000 a month, and every year they took 25% of that away. So I was both supported.
That's amazing.
And also had this ticking clock.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
A sort of incentive to get off of their dime, which like...
I love that. That's so smart.
And laid that all out clever for me at the very beginning.
Right. You know? So expectations were set. There was no rug pulling. So were you able to... I mean, obviously we know now you're able to pull it off, but at the time when you were really in it...
Yeah.
How quickly were you able to make up the difference? Or
yeah, I mean, I worked all sorts of odd and terrible jobs, and some of them were in the interest of my career, and some of them were in the interest of making a little bit of an additional buck. I did some freelance graphic design. I did months of background work. I was village idiot at the New York Renaissance Fair. I did a children's theater gig that sent
that
me to like Kentucky and
is that,
Alabama.
Is that pay better than a poet?
Idiot. I think $75 a day. Is that better than a poet? Might be.
Could
Might be.
Be.
I would not have taken the job at College Humor at the age of 21 if I did not need the money. That is true.
Okay. That's pretty wild.
What was that first job?
At College Humor?
Yeah.
It was director of original content. They hired me. They plucked me out of the comedy group that I shared with Josh Rubin and Elaine and Vinny and Matt to figure out video, whatever that meant to them.
And why wouldn't you have taken it, do you think? Like, what was it about the job? Did it feel like it was like, oh, now I'm on the corporate side? Like, it felt like selling out a little bit? Okay.
It felt corporate. Like, it didn't feel, you know, I knew that I would turn it into as creative a job as possible, but I wasn't eager to report to an office every day.
Did you ever feel, do you ever feel guilty? I feel like there's a lot of people you hear from folks, because I was also supported by my parents very similarly coming out of college. They're like, we would have paid for your graduate school, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to help you out while you figure out your dream, which is like for Indian parents, I'm like, holy cow, that was incredibly progressive and forward thinking of them, and I'm indebted to them.
And for you being the third kid.
Yeah. I had a fallback plan because I had brothers that have careers in Silicon Valley, and I knew I could sort of pop up. But like in thinking, I feel a little bit guilty sometimes, you know, that like I was supported in that way. And I'm wondering how you navigate that.
100%. 100%. I mean, you know, I talk to some people who are in this business who do not come from the kind of background that I came from. And I feel like I'm beginning to relate to them because I felt an existential threat even being supported by my parents. And then I'm like, well, if I felt an existential threat, knowing that I could probably return home to Cambridge, Massachusetts, they, like, if I was in their position, I would be on the verge of a panic attack every day.
Yep.
As much as I did feel pressure, and I did feel an extraordinary amount of pressure, it probably pales in comparison to someone who doesn't have a background that they can fall on. There's this very funny debate in the Dropout fandom, which I don't think anyone is taking all that seriously. Which is, am I a Nepo baby or am I not a Nepo baby? Which is like the debate against is people saying like, well, wait a second, they're in different industries. That doesn't count, which is a very funny argument. To which he would say,
well, actually your dad's kind of in content.
Yeah.
That's true.
Your
dad is kind of the Nepo.
Yes,
baby,
my dad is the Nepo father because Nepo father. I got him into social media. All people want from you is to acknowledge that these kind of things give you an unfair advantage.
Right.
And they absolutely do. Like, there was a whole lot of people who were able to see me as responsible in a corporate environment because of who my father is, who were able to see me as someone who was a potential leadership figure because of who my father is.
Can I tell you just a quick story about my father's legacy?
Yes.
I come from Uzbekistan. I was once in a taxi cab in New York City, and these kind of odds continue to happen to me. But my driver was also from Uzbekistan, and he asked me what my last name is, and I said Weintraub, and he goes, "Oh, is your father's name Sasha?" And I go, "Yeah," and he goes, "He used to beat the out of me every day on the playground."
Oh God.
I'm like, I would like to get out now.
Oh my God.
Thank you. I'd like to get out now.
Well, Milana.
He was like, you call him. You call him. You tell him I'm okay.
You're a Nepo bully.
Oh my gosh.
That's right. That's my legacy. So people, when they knew my dad, actually knew that they should fully stay away and live in fear.
Oh man.
That's my legacy.
That's amazing.
Wild.
That's so beautiful. I also just to kind of pseudo relate is I had some money saved after college, and what I think is genius about your parents taking a little bit of money away regularly is it keeps you from doing this thing, which I found myself doing and then I was able to snap myself out of it, which is like, oh, well, when I run out of money, then I'll hustle in this direction. Yes. Or when I run out of money, that's when I'm going to make some big move to save my ass.
Yes.
And one of my friends was like, well, why would you wait until that moment to do something about it? And I'm like, oh, right. I can behave as though I have no money right now. What would I do if I was completely desperate? Yeah. How would I act now? And I think that is actually quite beneficial to the creative process, or like to the generation of ideas.
Yeah, it really does help to feel that you are a James Bond being lowered into the snake pit of poverty to make you realize that, like, you better figure out some anti-venom. Like, the clock is ticking.
Yep.
The snakes are getting closer.
Well, we did ask your mom, you know, Sam is both a businessman, entrepreneur, and is a clown and hilarious performer. Which version of him do you prefer?
Oh, I wonder. I have to imagine that. Well, it's actually, this is interesting because, like, my mom doesn't get everything I do. Like, but she did introduce me to Monty Python, so in a way she's responsible. I am going to say clown.
Okay, let's see what she says.
I love the performer, especially because, you know, I've been too serious a person for most of my life. So I appreciate so much the humor, and that Sam encourages me to be more playful in my own life. Mm. But I have enormous admiration for the way in which he has wrapped himself around the entrepreneur, the business part of it. There was a time, and I think, again, it was as he was getting ready to quit school and think about how he was going to make his way in the world, he realized he needed to understand more about money and how people make money. I just remember this accusation that we were not preparing him to make money. And, you know, it was true. We were both on salaries and we had retirement accounts because that's what our educational institutions offered us, and not an entrepreneurial bone in either of our bodies.
Dude, I feel this so hard. I feel like that's the thing people don't think about becoming performers or musicians or artists, is that it sort of does force you to also become an entrepreneur. You are your product, and you have to go out there and sell it, and you've got to market it and package it, and you got to do all these things. And that's the thing that I think is skipped over in the minds of parents who are like scared about us going out into the performance realm, into this world.
Sure.
Is that like what you should be scared of is the fact that we have not been prepared at all to become the CEOs of our own little enterprise.
Yeah. Yeah, man, that's a great point. I think it's especially true now, you know. It's probably even truer now than it was 30, 40 years ago in our industry. Right. Like in the 90s, like being a screenwriter paid far more than does today. Being a television writer paid far more than does today on average. And we
and was more stable. Right.
Born into the era of the internet, where it turns out, you know, entrepreneurism and wearing many hats, like being good at lots of different things, running yourself as a little business, like you're saying, is so impactful. My parents, in all of their, you know, dedication to public policy, and all of their clear and obvious concern for their fellow man, were not very savvy about personal finance and were pretty explicit with me that, like, by going into the arts, I was taking a small vow of poverty. And so I think there was this kind of rebellious piece of me again that was like, I'm not just going to do this. I'm going to do like really well at it. Mm. You know, I'm going to prove all of you wrong. And what now, as far along into my career as I am, I find myself really interested in this economy as it relates to other people.
What do you mean?
Well, I'm really interested in like the economy of being an artist and if there are means of improving that economy for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
We did our first profit share at the end of last year as Dropout, which I don't think it was all that radical. Turns out, a little radical for our industry, We had paid folks throughout the year to what it meant was that anyone who had done work for us over the course of the year got a meaningful bonus on top of their rate. And that went for crew as well as for cast. We had paid folks to audition for us that year. And because we had, it meant that people who had auditioned for us were participating in the profit share, which hadn't even occurred to me, but like made me very proud as a former auditioning and struggling actor myself.
Yeah. You're telling people that their time is valuable, that even if they don't book the job, there's still some influence that they have on the process.
Well, that's 100% true. Yeah. When people audition, they contribute creatively to a project.
Yeah.
They are helping you hone the final product.
Yeah.
That's very cool. Do you think that there's something, we're going to get to the last question, but just a follow-up to this. Do you think there's something about you growing up feeling financially comfortable that makes you feel safer financially in the world now? Because what you're doing is actually quite generous, which I would also say is quite brave.
I was going to say.
I think if you were more
going back to that brave, brave question, it's pretty damn brave. Yeah.
Yeah. If you were more afraid, you would have more of a scarcity mindset that would say, I'm going to keep as many of these profits as I can.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true. I mean, I'm sure part of it comes from a place of security. I have in my business career spent a lot of time with people who are worth tens, if not hundreds of millions, if not in one specific case, billions of dollars. And I do think that I have always felt that it takes a very unique and probably not altogether healthy person to make tens of millions of dollars and then go, that's not enough. Like, what kind of insecurity is that? And then if you're not careful, doesn't that become an addiction like anything else?
Right.
Let's get to our last question because it is time for us to get there. This is something that I've talked to you and Elaine about a lot because of my own incentive. But you and Elaine have decided to not have kids.
Ooh, boy. Yeah.
What was it like telling your mom that?
Whoa. I don't remember one moment where we told my mom this. I feel like it was sort of like maybe steadily over time and drips and drabs as we got older, like becoming a little bit like more confident in that decision and also spoon feeding that information in such a way to her that the poison becomes more digestible. I know that these days she expresses, and I, you know, take her at face value when she says this, that she's perfectly comfortable with it. I think that like she empathizes with some of our reservations about it and also knows that like I am so apparently determined to live an unusual life that it feels like pretty consistent with my other decision making. So like that piece of her that's a little bit of a hipster, which is so rubbed off on me, right? That piece of my mom that like became an acupuncturist in her 50s is like such her. I take such inspiration from her like originality and daringness. So there's a way in which I feel like she can relate to it.
Let's hear what she said.
When they first talked about not having children, I was disappointed. I have a granddaughter, a daughter of my other son, Adam, and I suppose that I expected that Sam and Elaine would have a kid or two, but I've gotten over the disappointment. But also I think that Sam and Elaine are making the right decision for them. They need another puppy.
Boy, do we ever.
We are now going to move on to the lightning round. These are short, fast answers. The points are worth double. By the way, you do get points for that last one. Sandeep, are you?
You're up to 4 gold stars right now. Oh my God, you did quite well. After totally blanking for a while, you had a second half comeback. And
that also is the story of my life. So that's perfect.
There you go.
Perfect.
Okay. The first question in our lightning round is, what is one thing Sam does that will always make you smile? What do you think your mom said?
Send her a wreath for her birthday every year.
Okay.
And he comes towards me with his arms open for a hug and says, Mom.
Oh, that's very sweet.
See, you don't have to buy anything, turns out. What was his favorite toy as a child? What was your favorite toy?
I think my mom would say Legos.
A set of colored markers.
Damn. Oof.
It's like, is she even your mom?
Just okay. Flunking what is this the best, brutally.
What is the best present you've ever given your mom?
Maybe this is the real answer. I don't want to double down.
Just this past Christmas, he gave me a copy of The Artist's Way.
Oh, yeah. I did do that. Mm. She's taken that very seriously.
That's awesome. We asked, what is your favorite comedian, Sam? What is your favorite comedian?
Well, as a kid, I was obsessed with Jim Carrey. I had Jim Carrey posters all over my walls. Literally wallpaper. I had like a Liar Liar poster. Just like, what kid has a Liar Liar poster on their wall?
Monty Python.
Oh, I said that earlier.
You did say that earlier, but you didn't say it right now.
When it mattered.
I hope I have the lowest score.
We asked your mom, who's your favorite actor?
Anthony Hopkins.
Jack Nicholson.
Oh.
Is that your favorite actor?
Definitely not. But it was for an era when I was growing up. I got super into The Shining and One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yes.
Favorite movie?
Would mom know this?
What do you think she would say? Just to win some points here. We can stray from the truth.
Probably one of these Bill Murray movies that I grew up watching.
Okay, we can generally say Bill Murray.
We'll give you all Bill Murray movies.
Singing in the Rain.
Damn.
I don't remember.
Sam, what's your favorite color?
Green.
Sort of blue-green, aqua.
We're going to give it to you, baby.
Let's go. Give it to you.
What is your superpower?
What is my superpower?
Yeah, what is your superpower?
Probably like something in the creative, like being able to imagine things and bring them into reality, I'd say is my superpower.
Ooh, manifestation? Okay.
Humor.
Oh.
No, it's
very concise.
It's just you're funny.
You're a clown. What's your mom's superpower?
She's a lot of spectacular things. She is really, really amazing at caring for people.
Understanding.
I'm gonna count it.
You're both very generous.
I'm going to, you know, caring and understanding. They go hand in hand. Sam, this has been a delight. What do you think before we leave you? What did you think about this experience hearing your mom, this conversation? Did you kind of get any takeaways? Did you hear anything you were surprised by?
My relationship with my mom has been through so many chapters, like from those like the early years together to our tumultuous teenage years to later years. It's like we live so much in the contemporary version of our relationship. It's kind of like nice to revisit some of that older stuff. Like it makes me want to go back and relive some of that with her, because I think now as an adult, you know, we'd both have a different perspective on it. And really just like what a lovely opportunity to celebrate this person that's been so impactful for me. Mom, it's your son. I just finished up recording with Milana and Sandeep and wanted to say first, we did okay, like 5 to 6 points. So I hope, So I hope like, you know, both of our overachieving nature, I hope that you're not disappointed with that number. And secondly, your responses were so lovely and it was so nice to have an opportunity to connect with you in this unusual way. I love you very much and I'll download with you fully later.
Life can always use more Cedar Point. And right now, you can get more Cedar Point for less with the Fun Day Bundle for just $74.99. Each bundle gets you admission, parking, and all-day dining for one low price. That means more coasters like Steel Vengeance and more nostalgic fun in the boardwalk area. But you better hurry because this bundle won't last. Save now at cedarpoint.com.